started. I saw the temple last on Sunday, and by that time the army had taken up positions all the way around it. They'd moved on to the rooftops overlooking it. It seems quite clear to me that a siege of the temple has started.
That siege turned into a full-scale attack by the Indian army on the Golden Temple complex in Amritsar, the Sikhs' holy city. Shells fired by tanks reduced one of the Sikhs' two most sacred buildings to rubble.
And then on Sunday evening, curfew was imposed and...
I'm Mark Tully, and in 1984 I reported on Operation Blue Star, the army's battle with Sikh extremists occupying the shrine. One of the most extraordinary incidents in the history of independent India, a nation proud of its age-old multi-religious culture. Now, 30 years later, for the BBC World Service, I examine new evidence about this battle and its aftermath, describe Blue Star's impact on Sikhs at the time, and examine the wounds that have still not healed.
The violence in 1984 left a traumatic imprint on the memory of the entire targeted collective.
The Sikh community became more aware of its sense of identity in 1984, almost like a rosebush. When its head is cut off, it suddenly grows again and flourishes.
Operation Blue Star created more damage to the Sikh psyche than ever before. But Sikhs are still nationalists and the social fabric still holds strong.
The government was so afraid there would be a violent reaction to the operation that they imposed a strict curfew on the whole of the Sikh state of Punjab. We journalists were forced to leave Punjab and saw the impact of the curfew. There wasn't a vehicle to be seen on the Grand Trunk Road that Rudyard Kipling's Kim travelled down. In village after village, the doors were firmly shut. There are some 27 million Sikhs around the world, most of them living in India, particularly in their home state, Punjab. The men are easily recognised because their religion, only founded in the 15th century, forbids them to cut their hair, which they pile up under their distinctive turbans, and they keep their beards long. What are the beliefs which hold the Sikh community together?
The Sikhs are organized around reverence for and fulfillment of the teachings and practices of the 10 gurus of the tradition, the 10 Sikh gurus.
Dr. Anne Murphy is the chair of Punjabi language, literature and Sikh studies at the University of British Columbia in Canada.
I think one of the striking things about the Sikhs as a community is their commitment to the service of others, both within the community and outside of the community. Every religion is characterized by diversity, and the Sikh tradition is no different. But having said that, being Sikh adheres to a fairly clearly delineated set of beliefs and texts and practices.
Sikhs, like any other community, are not a homogeneous community. Every caste looks things from one's own perception. Similarly, there's a class division, then Punjab, outside Punjab division. So all these divisions are there.
Dr. Amarjeet Singh Narang is a Sikh himself and a professor of political science at the Indira Gandhi National Open University in Delhi. He explains how Operation Blue Star affected the Sikh community.
When these types of alienation comes, then one starts feeling as a community. So therefore, at that time, the issue is not of a class difference or of a territorial difference. At that time, it is a question of I am being treated because I belong to that community, because I am wearing a turban. So at that time, a sense of group identity comes in. Yes, we are a religion and therefore we are being targeted. And therefore we have certain grievance as a community.
The Shatabdi Express from Delhi to Amritsar is approaching Amritsar. We're only running 1 hour late, which is not bad for Indian Railways. Amritsar is a city I'm really looking forward to coming back to. I love the Golden Temple, which of course is situated here. I always feel that Golden Temple is perhaps of all the sacred buildings in this amazing country, the one which has that greatest sense of sanctity about it. And of course Amritsar is also one of the biggest cities in Punjab, which is the Sikhs' homeland.
How are you? One of the first persons I met in Amritsar was Gumbir Singh, who works on environment and youth projects in Punjab.
There has been a sense of alienation amongst the Sikhs for quite some time. Basically, if you'd ask me, Sikhs have always been nationalists and they are secularists as well. However, despite the humongous sacrifices that the community made during the freedom movement and before, during the times of the Gurus, against the Mughals for that matter, somehow there was this feeling that the community was not recognized enough. Punjab as a state, which extended from, at one point in time, Peshawar through Delhi, is today a fraction of its size. And then you had Bhindranwala.
Janel Singh Bhindranwale was the charismatic Sikh preacher who, with his followers, took on the Indian Army during Operation Blue Star.
Bhindranwale is preparing to resist. Sandbags are hurriedly filled as cover for marksmen.
Leading up to the battle, I had filmed them fortifying the Golden Temple complex.
Positions have been taken on all rooftops. Lighting has been installed in case the police come at night.
Bhindranwale's movement insisted on strict religious orthodoxy, demanded Khalistan, a homeland for the Sikhs, and provoked hostility towards Hindus by saying Sikhs had become their slaves. His followers were responsible for a spate of murders and extortion, and his movement challenged the then ruling Congress Party, led by Indira Gandhi. Gumbir Singh again.
He grew in momentum, his movement grew in momentum, and he was able to attract, through his engagement of the youth, many people. We saw the youth getting involved considerably and taking militant overtones, but it did not really become a popular movement of the entire area.
Bhindranwale headed the Damdami Taksal, a historic Sikh school. Mokham Singh, a spokesman for the school, outlined Bindranwale's basic grievance for me.
Self-governance and power were taken away from the minority groups, but they weren't given any security or protection when the British left. And the promises the Congress Party had made at that time were forgotten after 1947. The total power and strength of India was in the hand of one person in one house, Nehru, and then his daughter Indira Gandhi. Bhindranwale broke that monopoly of power.
Ironically, many, including the political scientist Dr. Narang, believe Bhindranwale was Indira Gandhi's own creation.
Since she didn't have a solid social base which Congress earlier had, the lack of an organized party, lack of vision, clarity of ideology and all that, she was looking for different types of opportunities. So therefore, now she was looking for a new slogan. So this slogan came, Desh Bachao, save the country. And from whom to be saved? So there are only two external forces and internal forces. And these internal forces were threat from minorities. Everyone knows that Bhindranwale and his group were Congress creation, Indira Gandhi's creation. She never thought or she never knew what will be the culmination.
So Bhindranwale was a convenient tool in her hand in a way.
Sure, sure. In fact, she was advised to create a Bhindranwale so that you can attack a community. You never know that you have created a genie and how to bring it out of the bottle.
Tarlochan Singh, the close confidant of one of the two leading Sikh politicians in the Congress Party at that time, thinks it was a case of the party climbing onto Bhindranwale's bandwagon rather than Indira Gandhi's deliberate strategy.
Circumstances at that time in Punjab helped him to grow. And he, being a very attractive personality, good speaker, good to look at, he attracted people's attention. The Congress took advantage of his popularity and personality and tried to go with him. So he's not the creation of Congress, but Congress tried to take gain out of his popularity.
So Bhindranwale was created by circumstances and Congress then took advantage.
Yes,
of.
So naturally Bhindranwale took advantage and he became very popular and that went to his head and he slowly and slowly became defiant and went all out.
Whether Indira Gandhi created Bhindranwale or not, her party's dalliance with him produced a dangerous and even explosive mixture of religion and politics. Lieutenant General Kuldeep Singh Brar, who commanded the operation, told me that Indira Gandhi took the decision to mount it too late.
The plan we finally adopted was that which survived the scrutiny of several plans and the one that offered the best hope of success. Time was an important factor. This plan should have been executed ideally some months earlier and before the temple had been converted into a fortress. The Akal Takht, which was really their command post, had been fortified from the basement upwards. Pillboxes had been built by cutting into the walls and marble facades. Machine gun nests had been sited, and underground passages and manholes had been converted into death traps.
The Golden Temple is shining in the middle of the sacred pool that surrounds it. Where I'm standing, opposite the temple, is the shining white marble Akal Takht, the second most sacred building in this complex. Walking round the pavement to the main gate on the north side, I'm coming to the steps leading onto the complex. The initial wave of commandos was shot by men hiding under these steps, and this was the first sign that the operation was going to go disastrously wrong.
The progress was very slow. We suffered heavy casualties because of restraining factors. I had been told that we must use minimum force, we must prevent collateral damage to the temple. And you can imagine when our troops, they are fired upon from the southern and western wing and they can't return the fire out of fear that some bullets may go into the Harmandir Sahib.
Harmandir Sahib is the Golden Temple itself.
That's right. It's a great restriction. It's like going into a boxing ring and being able to use only one hand.
Eventually, it was decided the only way to defeat Bindranwale was to get tanks to pummel the Akal Takht, reducing much of it to rubble. Fires broke out, and in the inferno, Bindranwale and his colleagues died. The one consolation was that the army had obeyed their order not to damage the Golden Temple itself. Jotedar Joginder Singh was a priest of the Golden Temple at that time, living in a flat that overlooked the complex. Looking out from the flat, he described to me the battle he witnessed.
There were four tanks. There, you can see. Three were far away and one was here. They were bombarding the whole night. One shell fell on the veranda and one hit the Akal Takht. The whole night, we were in real trouble. One bullet hit here, here on this door. One broke the ventilators and hit here.
You're listening to Gunfire Over the Golden Temple with me, Mark Tully, on the BBC World Service. Bindranwale's military advisor, a former general, had fortified the complex skillfully, and Bindranwale's men put up stiff resistance, making the army's original plan impossible to implement. The official figure for casualties is 331 soldiers killed or injured, about one-third of the soldiers involved in the operation.
There is no doubt that the army paid a heavy price in terms of casualties, and the soldiers never disobeyed the orders given to them, despite heavy provocation. As one who had to give them some of the most unreasonable orders, I salute them for their unflinching obedience and restraint.
The army operation occurred on a religious festival celebrating the martyrdom of the Guru who built the Golden Temple. So a number of pilgrims were trapped inside the complex. No one knows exactly how many of the 492 people killed were innocent pilgrims and how many were Bindranwale's men, because of the mass cremations after the operation. But Jotedar Aftar Singh, the president of the committee responsible for managing the Golden Temple and other major Sikh Gurdwaras, reflected the anger still felt about the operation.
Many, many people were killed during that operation. who came here to celebrate the martyrdom day, our fifth guru, Guru Arjan Dev Ji Maharaj. And they were detained and they were killed.
The government says that they had to take this action because the Golden Temple had been captured by Jarnail Singh Bhindranwale.
The government should have adopted some other method. They demolished the seat of authority of the Sikhs, Akal Takht. This is a blot on the face of our government, which attacked our so religious and sacred place.
Operation Blue Star created a crisis in the army. Sikhs have a long tradition of military service, and at that time they provided about 10% of the army's manpower. 2 days after Operation Blue Star, almost an entire battalion of Sikhs deserted. From there, the trouble spread to three other formations. In a small room in the residential area of the Golden Temple complex, I met a group of elderly, white-bearded Sikhs who were unrepentant deserters.
We have no regrets. We did it for our own religion. We didn't do it for anybody. No regrets at all.
How did you feel when you decided that you were going to mutiny?
We didn't think anything at that time. We didn't think about our parents nor children. We only saw our duty, not family, wife, children, everything. Our country is our duty. If there is no country, then what is duty for?
Is it true that Bhindranwale's supporters had been coming into your camps trying to persuade you to back Bhindranwale?
No one provoked us to do it. The Sikh religion asked us to do that. What we saw on the news made us do it. This wasn't sown by Bhindranwale. This was sown by the policy of central government. When there is injustice to someone, then there will be someone to raise voice for justice.
Indira Gandhi eventually realized that some decisive action had to be taken. Bhindranwale was openly defying her government, and many Indians were losing faith in her ability to act.
Mrs. Indira Gandhi herself was not in favor of the military action.
R.K. Dhawan was her long-serving personal secretary.
But the chief of army staff assured her that when the army goes there, there will be no damage to the property, no damage to the Golden Temple, no damage to the complex, and there will be no casualties.
When the army's plan went so wrong, Indira Gandhi was anxious to demonstrate that she had not intended any insult to Sikhs and still had faith in them.
When all this happened, the security people took a decision that all the Sikh security personnel in our ring should be removed from there. But when she got to know of it, she was very angry. She ordered that all those security guards who have been removed should be brought back. She didn't expect what happened.
Good evening. Indira Gandhi, ruler of the world's largest democracy, died today, shot down by two of her own bodyguards. They were Sikhs taking revenge for the invasion of their temple in June.
And tonight, the moment she came out of her room and I accompanied her, we had hardly walked a few steps when one of the assailants, Bharat Singh, he started shooting from his revolver. Even Mrs. Gandhi never thought that such a thing will ever happen. Before we could even realize as to what has happened, he had already fired. And within the seconds only, the other gentleman, Satwant Singh, he also started firing from his 10 gun, and she fell on the ground. And the security guard threw his weapons and said that, "I have done my job, you can do whatever you like."
The All India Medical Institute in Delhi is India's premier hospital and research center. It's a fairly chaotic place, as you can hear. My colleague Satish Jacob was the only journalist who'd heard that this was the place that Indira Gandhi had been brought to after she had been shot.
I want to show you where I went when I came looking for Mrs. Gandhi in the hospital.
So how did you break through? I mean, there must have been enormous security around her, wasn't there?
Nothing. You will be surprised, Mark. There was hardly any soul here. No one knew that Mrs. Gandhi had been brought here. And the emergency ward used to be on the third floor. You know, the operation theater and all that. So I went up and I saw an elderly doctor. He was taking off his white gloves and, you know, that white cloth from his mouth. So I knew that he just come from the operation theater. So I didn't say anything to him. I just started walking with him. And he looked deep in thought and worried, and I said, I hope everything's all right. And he shot a very angry glance at me, and he said, are you crazy? She's been riddled from top to bottom, and you're saying that everything is all right.
It was on the road leading to the hospital that riots against Sikhs started. The violence spread across the country. Ironically, Punjab was one of the few states which remained peaceful. In the capital, Delhi, the police collapsed, and for 3 days, gangs roamed the city, brutally killing Sikhs, often burning them and their homes and their livelihoods.
Now that the army's presence is being felt in Delhi, the worst affected city, the violence seems to be under control, but most of the capital is still under curfew at night. Officials say that no incidents have been reported from the states of Haryana, Uttar Pradesh or Bihar during the last 24 hours. They too were badly affected. In Delhi, volunteer...
The official figure for deaths in Delhi is 2,150. But it's widely felt many more were killed in these riots. At the Nishkam Sikh Welfare Center in Delhi, survivors of the riots described their experiences. Nirmal Kaur was 12 at the time.
My uncle was killed and brother-in-law was burnt alive. My father was at work. He was a mason. By the time he came in the evening, there was a lot of commotion and fighting. Our neighbors hid my father and brought a pair of scissors for him to cut his hair.
Nirmal couldn't go on with the interview. Another survivor, Meena Kaur, described how many of her family were killed.
10 or 12 of us. For 2 or 3 days we went here and there from one place to another. After that we went to another village. No one asked us how we were. No one helped us there. My uncle said he would go to the shop. We tried to stop him, but he wouldn't listen. He left the house to get food, but as he was leaving, they killed him right in front of us.
I asked if the police had helped.
The police brought petrol tankers. They helped the killers. The police got people killed. If the police had helped us from the beginning, all of this wouldn't have happened. No one would have been killed.
It's widely believed that some leading members of Indira Gandhi's Congress party were involved in the riots. Kanwarpal Singh Gill, a senior police officer at the time, suggests that the police believed this was true.
I could see that the system has broken down. So there's no bias in the police as such. It was a total collapse of the system. And some officers trying to read the mind of the politicians. Probably the politicians want this, so if we do this, we'll get promoted.
So those officers connived, actually, with the rioting?
Some did. Connivance is of various types. If you don't take action, that also is connivance.
30 years later, trials of these Congress party leaders and others accused of involvement in the riots have not been completed. This causes deep resentment among Sikhs. To get the view of the party on this, I met one of its spokesmen, the distinguished lawyer Abhishek Singhvi.
Hi Abhishek, how are you?
There are, of course, allegations that certain Congress leaders and the party itself was directly involved in these riots.
I am not suggesting that there was no one associated with the Congress who allegedly might be complicit. I'm not giving a finding either way. That's for the courts to do. In a tragedy where the Prime Minister of the country is lost and such large-scale rioting takes place, you can't always prevent. Your image and your conduct is judged by what you do afterwards. Have people been punished requisitely?
But as a distinguished lawyer, surely you must be disappointed that the judicial process has not worked. The people have not been found either guilty or innocent.
Generally in India, we are proud of having outstanding judges and lawyers, and we're proud of having doctrines of law which are copied around the world. But backlog is a bugbear of our system, which makes us hang our head in shame.
In the next and final part of Gunfire Over the Golden Temple, we'll discover that this failure of the judicial system continues to fester. I'll be in Punjab again to see whether Bhindranwale's Khalistan movement still lives on and what has been the long-term impact of Operation Blue Star and the events surrounding it. I'll also hear from Sikhs abroad and ask why they seem more angry about the tragedies of 1984 than Sikhs living in India. You've been listening to Gunfire Over the Golden Temple. The producer is Philippa Gehring. Punjabi translations are by Krishan Tandon, who also voiced them along with Vinita Rishi. My name is Mark Tully, and this is a unique production for the BBC World Service. Document.